Shalom, welcome to SJTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to elevating the souls of Simcha Chazdai, Pesach Ben Dov, Meir Ben Yecheskel, and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers this week, look at what a price the Jewish people and the world are paying for the fact that JTF doesn't have a multi-million dollar budget. Look at the price we're paying that there is not one solid voice of sanity, of Kahanist sanity, in the world today. The past couple of days, the Israeli cabinet voted to release another 26 convicted Muslim terrorist mass murderers. All 26 of these Muslim terrorists are convicted murderers, have slaughtered innocent Jewish men, women, and children, all 26 of them. And they're being released as a gesture to the PLO Fatah terrorist mass murderers, because Israel is conducting negotiations with the PLO Fatah terrorist mass murderers for Israeli national suicide, to create a so-called Palestinian state, which would be Israeli national suicide. And so another 26 Muslim mass murderers are released. Thousands of Muslim terrorists have already been released. Thousands over the past few decades. But Jewish political prisoners who took action to try to protect the Jewish people, to save the Jewish people, they're never released from prison. They're not freed. And Chaim Ben Pesach is not allowed to make aliyah, is not allowed to step foot in Israel. All these Muslim terrorist mass murderers, they live in the land of Israel. They're able to walk freely in the land of Israel, murder people, and then get out of prison shortly afterwards, as gestures to the Muslim world. But Chaim Ben Pesach is not even allowed to visit Israel, to step foot in Israel. What a price we're paying. What a price we're paying when we see this type of injustice. When we see a world gone mad. We see it in Israel, we see it in America. In America, there's just one voice of sanity now, in my opinion, in Washington, and that's Ted Cruz. And by the way, I'm proud of Ted Cruz. I'm proud of him because he's not compromising and he's not bending and he's not caving in, even though everyone is attacking him and piling on and saying that he made things worse and this is crazy and what are you doing and you're not supposed to fight back. I saw one Republican consultant on television saying, Ted Cruz is going to turn the Republican Party into a party of no. You mean the Republican Party shouldn't say no to Obamacare? This Republican consultant was saying it's too negative to say no to Obamacare. And his name is Alex Castellanos. I think that was his name, Alex Castellanos, who, by the way, also stabbed Mitt Romney in the back numerous times when he was running for president last year. All these Republican consultants, all these Washington politicians, they stab everybody in the back just to get ahead and just to have the left-wing news media give them another interview and give them a little more publicity. So they say what the left-wing media wants them to say so they get invited. So this way they'll get invited on the shows and they'll get interviews and they get publicized. That's how it works. That's how the left-wing media gets the Republicans to betray all their principles and to stab all the good people in the back. And that's what the Republican establishment is all about, backstabbing. So we have insanity in Israel, insanity in America, insanity throughout the world. And we could be that voice of morality, of truth, of righteousness. That voice that finally stands up against evil and finally stands for what God wants us to stand for in this world. We have the capability of being that voice. We could be doing in Israel what Ted Cruz is doing in America. Ted Cruz, I think, is doing a great job in America. And I hope, God willing, that he becomes president in 2016. I hope that he continues to remain true to his principles. And I hope he never forgets that God will bless those that bless Israel and curse those that curse Israel. But we could be doing the same thing in Israel and then some, because Israel's a small country, and then some, if only we had a multi-million dollar budget. Simply because we don't have the resources to reach people with our message? There's so much evil in the world, all these terrible things are happening? Yes, that's the reality. If people are never exposed to the truth, if average people are never told what to do and how to organize and how to try to respond and how to try to speak up. If you don't have someone organizing them, if you don't have someone giving voice to their concerns, this is what happens. So, really, all the terrible things we're seeing are the price that we're paying for JTF not having enough funds to reach all the people of Israel. If we reached all the people of Israel, eventually we would reach huge numbers of people in America, because if we became a mass movement in Israel, if we had a multi-million dollar budget, we would become a mass movement in Israel. And if we became a mass movement in Israel, the American news media would cover us like crazy. They'd be doing the same thing to us that they did to Rabbi Kahana, that they did to Ted, that they're doing to Ted Cruz. They'd be attacking us and calling us names. Who cares? Finally, the truth would get out about Israel and the Jewish people and the Bible and morals. Who cares if they'd be attacking us? As our great leader, Rabbi Meir Kahana, Zecher Tzaddik VeKadosh Livracha, Hashem Yikom Damo, always used to say, I love when they're all aggravated and attacking. I love to see that, because that means we're winning. When they're aggravated and they're attacking us and they're upset, that means we're winning. When they pat us on the back and give us Nobel Peace Prizes for giving away land, that means we're losing. Oh, how we need a true Kahanist movement, a well-funded true Kahanist movement once again, to lead the way. Oh, how we need that. We need that so desperately. And so, once again, I just want to say, by the way, that we're still doing good. What we're doing is good. The work we're doing is positive. The work we're doing is good. Our videos are good. Our message is the right message. We're telling the truth in English and in Hebrew. We're telling the truth to Israelis and Americans and anyone else who wants to hear. What we're doing on our forum, what we're doing on our Facebook pages, what we're doing on our YouTube videos. We have thousands of videos already up on YouTube and hundreds of different YouTube accounts. We're doing good work. But it's not enough. We all know it's not enough. A new report came out that Iran is only a month away from building nuclear bombs. I hope that report, God forbid, I hope that report is not true. But look at where we are. Look at how Israel and America are doing such insane things, such suicidal things. Look at where we are. Look at the dangers we're facing. Look at the criminals who have become the leaders and who have been the leaders. And no one tells the truth. No one can tell the politically incorrect truth. Even Ted Cruz, as wonderful as I think he is, he can't tell the really politically incorrect truth about the Muslims, about black Jew haters and white haters in this country that someone should be exposing. It's long overdue. You know, I mean, he's taking so many arrows and bullets and everything else that they're throwing the kitchen sink at him just because he's against Obamacare. Look what they're doing, because they know that he's for real, because they know that he's sincere. They know he's not another establishment hack. But we need somebody who's going to tell the truth and the whole truth. And that would be the Kahanists. Someday, mark my words, I don't know if I'll live to see it, but someday people like us will have that big budget, will reach large numbers of people, and will eventually be in power in Israel. And that will bring the final redemption. Someday that will happen. I don't know if it'll happen in another year, another 5 years, another 10 years, another 100 years, another 300 years. I don't know. I have no idea. Much to my regret, I'm not a prophet. Ani lo navi ve'ani lo ben navi. I'm not a prophet. I'm not the son of a prophet. So I can't tell you. I can't prophesy what's going to happen. I can only guess based upon whatever knowledge we have from the news and from events. We can make guesses, but I can't tell you with any certainty because I'm not a prophet. But I do know for sure that what God promises us in the Bible and the Torah and in the Torah will come true. And God says that the Jewish people, or a very large number of the Jewish people, will return to Judaism and will regret the wrong they've done and will come back to Judaism and will become a light unto the nations and a holy nation and a nation of priests. That day will come. And that will bring final redemption to the whole world. That day will come. And the people who will be responsible for that will be uncompromising Kahanists. They won't be the politically correct, mealy-mouthed, bribed pieces of pathetic garbage that we have now as leaders. That's for sure. They won't even be rabbis who've been bribed and who, in exchange for government handouts, don't tell the truth to the Jewish people. The day will come when people who tell the truth will win eventually. Until that day happens, until that day comes, we are obligated and commanded to continue to do the best we can, to continue to try to reach people and wake people up, as many people as we can. We're going to do that until we reach enough people, that enough people are woken up and we can really build a mass movement. And we're going to continue to do that until the day comes when we get the resources we need. And again, I don't know if it'll happen even in our generation, but there must be someone to speak out and tell the truth. There must be. And it's the only thing that gives us hope that we're eventually going to reach the ultimate goal of really changing things completely. Because that eventually will happen. That eventually will happen. When it happens, it will happen forever. When the redemption comes, this time it's going to be the final redemption. This time it will be forever. That's something Chazal, there's no machloket, that's something Chazal agrees on. This is the final redemption. And so, I know all of our great JTFers understand this message. I know you understand why we're not allowed to be silent, why we have to speak out. What we're doing is not enough, because we don't have the ability to do what should be done in terms of reaching everybody. We can't. We don't have enough money. We don't have the ability. We can't do it. So we do everything that we can do, that we're capable of doing. May God have mercy on us all. And if we do what we're required to do, maybe God will have mercy on the world as a whole, if he sees at least some people sincerely speaking out and trying their best to bring forth a message of morals and truth and righteousness and justice. Maybe for the sake of the few, many will be saved. That has happened many times in history, especially in Jewish history. And so let's hope and pray. Let's hope and pray that we eventually do find a Sheldon Adelson that makes us his baby, makes us his pet project. If that day ever comes, if we ever get that billionaire like Sheldon Adelson to make us his pet project, you watch and see what a different world this is going to become. Watch and see what we could do if we have those types of resources, if we have that ability. We already showed you once before with the JDL and the Campaign to Free Soviet Jewry. But most of you are too young to remember what happened in those days, in those glorious days. But we've proven what we could do. We've proven we could do it. At that time, we were able to do it because we were doing it with bombs. We can't do bombings anymore, and that wouldn't work nowadays. It's a different issue, different era, different period of time, completely different situation. Now we've got to do it the hard way, the old-fashioned way. We've got to reach people with a message. May God help us find a way to reach people with a message on a massive scale. If anybody has ideas, we're open. We want your ideas. And or we want to, of course, get the resources, which automatically would enable us to reach people on a massive scale. If we had a multi-million-dollar budget, then we can reach people on a massive scale in the Jewish state, for sure, because the Jewish state is a small country of 6 million Jews. And so let's hope and pray that God help us, that God gives us the answers on how to achieve these goals, and that God has mercy. That God has mercy on the Jews and on the righteous Gentiles. In the meantime, there are things that every JTFer can do to help us, to make a difference. When you see us put up Hebrew and English videos on Facebook and on YouTube, you can help by liking, favoriting, commenting, sharing, and mirroring those videos. When you mirror, like, favorite, comment, and share videos, that boosts the videos in the search engines. That helps us reach more people. That helps us. Even though we have a limited budget, you're helping us reach more people. The name of the game is to reach as many people as possible, to bring the truth to as many people as possible, to expose the facts to as many people as possible. That's the name of the game. Secondly, help us with our forums. Post great posts on the forums and make the posts on the forums, and not only on the forums, but also on the Facebook pages. Make them exciting, inviting, so that people will want to join, will want to participate. We have great people that are doing that now. We need to continue that. We need to accelerate that process to make the forums and the Facebook pages ever more successful. That's how we reach more people, God willing. And last but not least, of course, we need checks, money orders, and cash donations to our post office box. Every donation makes a difference. Every donation enables us to reach more people. Every donation enables us to tell people. It doesn't have to be this way that we free Arab Muslim Nazi terrorists, that we have the Arab Muslim Nazis controlling our Holy Temple Mount, that we have an Israeli government that only knows how to surrender and give away Jewish land and endanger the survival of the Jewish people. It doesn't have to be this way. It doesn't have to be this way in America either, that we have a rotten Muslim Jew-hating beast in the White House who's destroying the United States and sell out politicians, both Democrat and Republican, who allow him to do it. It doesn't have to be that way. Every check, money order, cash donation sent through the regular mail to our post office box, it makes a big difference. It helps us. It helps us reach more people. And that is important. And if someone prefers, instead of sending it through the regular mail, if someone prefers to help us with their credit card online, that's also fine. All you have to do is go to the donate button on JTF.org. JTF.org is our English main page, the main page on our English website. You go to JTF.org, on top there's a donate button. You could also do the same thing on Hayamin.org, our Hebrew main page. God bless the wonderful people that are helping us. We do have some wonderful people in JTF that are helping us. God bless you. Let's continue the fight. Let's accelerate the fight. It makes a difference. It's not enough, but we got to do everything we can, because if we do everything we can, hopefully we'll bring closer the day when we will have enough to go all the way and win the big victory that we really want to win. I don't know when that's going to happen again. Can't promise you success in our lifetime. I don't know. I can promise you, though, that at least with us, we're going to try the best we can. We're going to reach as many people as we can, and we are doing good work. What we're doing is good and vital and positive and important. It's not enough because we don't have enough money. But, still, it's important. It's important. Just because we can't reach millions doesn't mean we shouldn't reach thousands of people. We're reaching thousands of people with our message. That's important. It's not enough. There's no question it's not enough. But it's still important that we do this. It's still important that we build whatever we can build to try to save whatever we can save. And hopefully, seeing this, God will have mercy on us all. Bezrat Hashem, God willing. Okay, now let's go to the questions from our great JTFers. If we can do that, let me just get in over here for a second. There we go. And we start out with the great Lewinsky sucks, Dr. Brennan rocks, who writes, and I quote, "Do you think the Dems will win the House in 2014, unquote. God forbid, I hope not, and I don't think so. I don't think they will, no. And Lewinsky sucks, Dr. Brennan rocks, now writes, and I quote, "Also, please discuss Rabbi, quote unquote, Yimach Shlemo Aviner, thanks," unquote. Well, of course, that's a reference to Shlomo Aviner, who is not a rabbi. You're right. That's you know, anybody who behaves like that is not a real rabbi. I don't care if he has so-called smicha, which is the so-called rabbinic ordination. A traitor can never be a rabbi. You can't betray the Torah and call yourself a rabbi. It just doesn't work that way. In any event, this individual, unfortunately, does a lot of harm because he has a lot of power. He has the money, by the way, that we don't have. He's got the millions of dollars. He's the head of Yeshivat Ateret Yerushalayim, and he receives millions of dollars for his yeshiva in Jerusalem and for his activities with Moetzet Yesha and the establishment. And what has he done in his life? When the Sinai was being surrendered and Rabbi Meir Kahana said, we must resist with our bodies and fight back the way Martin Luther King and Mahatma Gandhi would have. We should have thousands of people here ready to resist and fight back. When Rabbi Kahana said that, Shlomo Aviner and all the other phony, hypocrite, bribed pieces of garbage said, oh no, you can't do that. What are you talking about? What are you, crazy? And so he said there should be no resistance to the Sinai retreat. No resistance. You're not allowed to resist. When the soldiers come in and destroy the communities the Jews built in the Sinai, like Yamit, and throw thousands of Jews out of their homes and do all these other things, which is what they did in the early 1980s when they surrendered the Sinai and gave the whole Sinai over to Muslim Nazi Egypt, you're not allowed to resist, he said. You can't resist. And many Jews, unfortunately, listened to him. And then he said that he had the same message during the Oslo surrender agreements. He said, we can't resist during the Oslo. We're not allowed to resist. You can be against it. You could say you're against it, but you're not allowed to actually resist. And in Gush Katif, he did the same thing. He and the other so-called rabbis did the same thing. They destroyed and crippled and neutered any resistance to what was going to happen in Gush Katif. Tens of thousands of Jews were ready to resist with their bodies, wanted to. But they were fooled and tricked by Shlomo Aviner and others and told and confused and told, no, we can't do this and go back to your homes and we're going to protest in Jerusalem. We're going to have a big rally in Tel Aviv. Other worthless things that couldn't have stopped the surrender of Gush Katif and the expulsion in Gush Katif. And as an example, in the most notorious incident, a Jewish teenager, a good Jew, a good young Jew, in Gush Katif, decided to lie with his body on the ground to prevent an army jeep from getting to the Jews to expel the Jews. He said he was going to civil disobedience. He was lying on the ground on the road so that the jeep couldn't go past, so that the soldiers would have to come out and remove him before they could continue. Well, something Martin Luther King and Mahatma Gandhi did, and everybody praises them. You know what Shlomo Aviner, Shem Reshaim Yerkav, you know what this animal did? Shlomo Aviner physically assaulted the teenager. Physically attacked the teenager, beat him and started screaming at him through a loudspeaker and calling him all types of names and saying, you're not allowed to do this. You're not allowed to block the soldiers from going to expel the Jews. Shlomo Aviner also urged Israeli soldiers to obey orders in expelling the Jews. There were some very good Jews, like Harav Shapira Zatzal, who was the late former chief rabbi of Israel, who said, you're not, the late Harav Avraham Shapira said, you are not allowed to obey orders to expel Jews. You have to disobey orders. You cannot, that you're not allowed to do. That's a crime. You're not allowed to do that. Shlomo Aviner said, no, Israeli soldiers must carry out the orders. If you get an order, even though you're against it, I know you're against it, but you have to obey orders. If they tell you to throw your fellow Jews out of the land of Israel and hand over the land of Israel to the Arab Nazi enemy, you've got to obey orders. That's what this piece of garbage has been doing to the Jewish people. And he does it in the name of Torah. In the name of Judaism, he commits this treason. What a vile individual. And he gets the millions of dollars from the government, from the taxpayers, from wealthy Jews. He gets millions. We get peanuts. That's the type of terrible generation we're living in. That's the tragedy of our generation. And that's why, you know, I say we have to hope and pray that that changes so that we'll have the resources to confront pigs like him. And he is a pig. To confront pigs like him once and for all and show the people of Israel how real Jews behave when someone wants to steal their land and throw their brothers and sisters out of their land and hand over their land to Amalek. Anyway, thank you so much, Lewinsky Sucks. And now we go to the great wandering samurai 81, who writes, and I quote, "Dear Chaim, what is the typical life expectancy of a drug addict?" Unquote. I don't know. I've seen different estimates here. I've seen heroin addicts, for instance, some people say only 5 or 10 years, between 5 and 10 years after they use heroin, the average heroin addict dies. Cocaine, I've seen 5 years, 7 years, as some of the estimates for people who start heavy cocaine use. Five to seven years, I've seen, is the average time before a cocaine addict dies. There are many reasons why drug addicts end up dying. Drugs suppress the immune system, so you get all types of illnesses and all types of, you have other types of problems. Drugs also, of course, create problems in terms of heart disease, in terms of the possibility for heart attack and stroke, and every possible disaster you can imagine can occur to the body when you have the distortion of narcotics in your bloodstream. So obviously, drug addicts live much shorter lives than people who are clean, than people who live drug-free lives, than people who live normal, healthy lives. There's no question about that. Whether it's 5 years or 10 years, or even if it was 15 years for certain types of drugs, there's no question that people will live much less when they use drugs. And not only that, that's their physical body dies in 5, 7, 10, or 12 years or something like that. Their physical body dies. Their soul dies the minute they start using drugs. Someone who uses drugs has murdered their soul already. You're murdering your soul. You're not alive when you're using drugs. You're completely defeating the purpose that God put you in this world for. You are not alive. You're like a walking dead person when you're using drugs. You're like the walking dead already, because your soul is dead. Your brain is dead. And so drug addiction is the destruction of a human being. God forbid, it's a terrible tragedy, and God forbid that it should ever happen to any good people. God forbid. Thank you, Wandering Samurai. And now we go to our great friend Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, what is your opinion on the gay marriages going on in New Jersey?" Unquote. Well, you know, Joe, we just did another great video. Actually, Shlomo did another great video on that animal, Chris Christie, who, of course, has decided to accept the gay marriages now. This is just the latest in his endless rhino sellouts. You know, I saw something interesting, Joe. Maybe I should do a video on this. I saw that he got a doctor to examine him and say that his health is normal. The doctor examined him and said his health is normal for what? His health is normal? That he's a normal, he has the normal health. Have you seen what Chris Christie looks like? He has normal health? And they even mentioned the blood pressure statistics. You know, I'm sure that's after he's taking his medication, because the doctor said that he has high blood pressure. But the latest blood pressure statistics, they showed that his blood pressure had been brought down, obviously, by the use of drugs. He has normal health? He's in good health? Normal for what? I mean, what type of doctor is this? What is this, a veterinarian in the zoo? I mean, first of all, to examine him, you need a veterinarian in the zoo. He really is a rhino. You know, rhino means Republican in name only, but he's a rhino with an H, R-H-I-N-O. I mean, give me a break. He's normal, his doctor said. He's normal. You know, and the media lets these people get away with this because the media likes him. Because he's a leftist. He's a leftist, a traitor, and a sellout. And the media, a Muslim lover. And the media likes this. He supports the gays. He supports the Muslims. He supports the mosque on Ground Zero. He supports, he appointed Muslim terrorist judges in New Jersey and said that anyone who questions his Muslim terrorist appointments is an Islamophobe. You know, so the news media, of course, the Muslim-loving media and the media that loves Sodom and Gomorrah and loves all the other things that he stands for, the media, you know, they of course are going to defend him. Oh, can you imagine if he becomes the Republican candidate for president? And please don't tell me that's impossible. If John McCain and Mitt Romney could get the nomination, and Bob Dole and Gerald Ford, if they could get the nomination, Chris Christie could also get it, God forbid. God forbid. That's why we have to support Ted Cruz. We can't allow someone like him to get the nomination. Thank you, Joe Gutfeld. And now we go to our great friend Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, what is Pirkei Avot, unquote. Okay, great question. Pirkei Avot is a masechet. Masechet is a tractate. It's part of the Mishnah. The Mishnah is Jewish oral law. When Moses and the Jewish people were at Mount Sinai, they got two laws. They got Torah she'be'al peh and Torah she'bichtav. Torah she'bichtav are the first five books of the Bible. First five books of the Bible are the written Torah. But they also received, at the same time, they received the oral Torah, which explains the laws of the written Torah. You would not understand what tefillin or circumcision or any of these other things. You wouldn't understand any of this stuff. It's the way it's written in the written Torah. You have to have the oral Torah to describe what to do and how to do it. And so they got the oral Torah, and the oral Torah is called the Mishnah, Jewish oral law. And one of the sections is called a Masechet in the Mishnah, is Pirkei Avot. Pirkei Avot is a moral guide. It originally was intended for judges, mainly for Torah judges, Dayanim. Dayanim are the Torah judges. But it's also important for everyone else because there's tremendous wisdom. There's tremendous, even in the simplest phrases and statements and declarations that are made in Pirkei Avot, there's such tremendous wisdom. So it's a very important moral guide for people to study. Thank you, Chicago Jew. And now we go to the great Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, what do you think of Jerusalem 5800? Is this an NWO program or a Jewish one? It doesn't mention the fakies, but mentions PA-occupied cities and Amman in the plans, unquote. You know, I think that there's a guy, his name is Kevin Beermeister. I think his name is Beermeister. He's an Australian Jew, and I've actually seen on YouTube, I've seen his videos. Oh, I saw one video where he was interviewed on YouTube. He's an Australian Jewish businessman, and he says he wants to develop Jerusalem, and he speaks about preparing the city for eventually rebuilding the Third Temple, for eventually being able to rebuild the Third Temple, which is a very noble goal. To develop Jerusalem and rebuild the city and prepare for the Third Temple, those are all noble goals. Those are goals that we obviously would agree with. But, as usual, because we don't have a guiding, we don't have a guiding light of people who don't compromise and who tell the truth and who stand for righteousness, a Kahanist movement like that, you know, the other things he says and how to achieve that are bad. He wants, for instance, to create connections to Arab Nazi cities like Amman and Cairo and Damascus and Beirut. He wants to create connections to places like Damascus and Cairo, where 99% of the population are Nazis who want to exterminate the Jewish people. What is he, nuts? You know, the other stuff he advocates, a wonderful thing, but when he talks about Amman in Jordan and Cairo in Egypt and these other Muslim cities, this is a guy who has no understanding of what Islam represents, of what the Muslim world is all about. He has no comprehension, unfortunately, and he's loaded. He is loaded. He's fashtup mit Geld. He's got all the Geld. He's got all the money. Geld is money in Yiddish. And so he wants to do all of these things. If he just gave us, just for him, a relatively small check of $5 million, $10 million bucks, then preparing the Jewish people for the temple and for the Beit HaMikdash and for all these other great things, then that would really seriously, in the appropriate way, take place. If only we got the resources, if only he would help us instead of the massive amount of money he wants to spend on some of the things he wants to spend it on are crazy. And I don't know that he's a bad person, by the way, because, you know, again, the goal of developing Jerusalem, I'm not sure if he's sincere, I don't know him, but the goal of the stated goal of developing Jerusalem and preparing it for the rebuilding of the Third Temple, that's a good goal. But how, the way he wants to go around about doing it, we'd never get there that way. If we're going to, I mean, the Muslim Nazis are going to be the biggest enemies of the Third Temple. Thank you, Binyamin Yisrael. And now we go to the great Dr. Dan, the voice of reason, common sense, and logic, who writes, and I quote, "One, after Sarah dies, Isaac and Abraham don't talk much to each other. He also returns with Hagar, please comment," unquote. Well, actually, Yitzchak and Abraham don't speak much to each other. If you see the Torah, they don't speak much to each other before either. There's not a lot of communication between them. Even during the 3 days when Abraham is on his way to the Akedah with Yitzchak, the Akedah is where he was going to sacrifice Yitzchak, where God tests him and tells him to sacrifice Yitzchak. During that 3 day period, they said very little to each other until the end. In fact, they said nothing to each other until the very end, where Yitzchak asks his father what's going on, but, you know, asks him and says, "What? You know, we're getting ready to do a sacrifice here. Where is the animal for the sacrifice?" But aside from the very end, they weren't speaking to each other much before either. And I think there's a reason. I think because they represented polar opposites. They represented great attributes in people. Ma'alot, we say in Hebrew. Attributes are ma'alot, positive. In other words, positive characteristics in someone's personality. Avraham represents chesed. Chesed means kindness, love, kindness, compassion. Avraham was the ultimate example of chesed, which is probably the most important attribute a person can have. But he was overwhelmingly chesed. And Yitzchak, his son, was din. Din means judgment, justice. See, let's do things, and he was righteous. You know, righteousness, justice, let's do things the right way. So they represented opposites. That's why the redemption and the complete creation of the Jewish people could not come solely from Avraham, because he only represented chesed. He only represented kindness. If you're overly kind, that could be a disaster. For instance, if you have a child and you tell the kid, and you want to be kind, you love your kid and you want to be kind, and you never, never discipline your kid, that's not good for the kid. If you tell your kid he can eat candy all day long and that's just eat candy and ice cream and other junk and garbage all day long and doesn't have to eat anything healthy, that's the worst thing you can do for your kid. If you don't discipline your kid, he's going to be a spoiled brat and he's going to turn into a monster. So chesed, kindness, when exaggerated, when unbalanced, is not a good thing. And Yitzchak represented din, judgment, righteousness, justice, which is also very important, but it has to be balanced with chesed. Finally, the third generation, Yaakov, mixed both chesed. He had both the attributes of chesed and din. He had the proper balance. And because he had the proper balance, he was able to create the Jewish people. Avraham did give birth to Yitzchak, who was his righteous son, but he also gave birth to Yishmael, who was not righteous, who was evil. And then Yitzchak, he gave birth to Yaakov, who was righteous, but he also gave birth to Esau, who was evil. So in other words, there wasn't this ability to create a people, to create brothers and a people and a nation. It was incomplete because they didn't have the right balance in terms of their characteristics until Yaakov comes along. Yaakov is Jacob. Jacob comes along, and Yaakov, he has both the right balance of din, judgment and justice and righteousness, and chesed, kindness. And so he gives birth to 12 sons, all of whom are righteous and who become the 12 tribes of Israel. Why did Abraham return to Hagar? Hagar was originally part of his dream of redemption. Abraham originally dreamed of establishing religious belief among the Gentile nations. Unfortunately, with Hagar and her son Ishmael, that wasn't going to work out very well. The Muslims did adopt Avraham's view of one God, of monotheism. That they adopted. but it was distorted with an evil religion, an evil, egotistical, murderous religion of Islam. So, you know, the Abraham's dream of using Hagar and Ishmael to bring to the Gentile nations the true religious belief, that didn't work out. That did not work. It turned, in fact, with Islam, of course, has turned into the ultimate evil. I mean, it's completely the complete opposite of anything righteous. Now, Dr. Dan writes, and so he returns to Hagar because he views Hagar as part of the process of Geulah, of redemption. He speaks to Hagar, and the same thing with Ishmael. He thought that they were part of the process of redemption, which they could have been, but they chose a different day, and their descendants chose a different course. And now, Dr. Dan writes, and I quote, too, your opinion on Debbie Schlussel. Did I say it right? I hope so. Debbie Schlussel. Unquote. I like Debbie Schlussel. I may not agree with everything she writes, but I think she's a gutsy person. I think she's principled, and I like her. I hope we work together with her someday. I hope we can work together. I like her. To me, she seems to be a gutsy person and principled. We don't agree. There's some issues we don't agree on. Some of the views she expresses I don't agree with. Some of them are against the Kahanist philosophy. But a lot of what she says is very true and very courageous. Thank you, Dr. Dan. And now we go to our great friend Obama Scum out of USA Now, who writes, and I quote, one, expose Indonesia and pray for its elimination, unquote. Indonesia is the world's biggest Muslim country. It is a cruel and evil nation. They've murdered hundreds of thousands of Christians and Catholics, and men, women, and children. You know, typical behavior in a Muslim country. I mean, just slaughtering people. And of course, people who believe in a religion that curses the Jewish people and goes against God's laws. The Bible says very clearly what's going to happen. They are going to be eliminated. And God willing, it should happen as quickly as possible, but they are going to be eliminated. Of course, if there is a minority of righteous people living in Indonesia, I don't wish any bad on them if they're righteous. I don't wish bad on any righteous people. There are exceptions to the rule in every country. If someone is righteous, I don't wish them bad, but the vast majority of Indonesians are Muslim haters. And they deserve to have happen to them what they want to do to us. What they want to do unjustly to us should happen to them instead. Absolutely. And now, second question, two, Fat Mike, Jewish atheist, punk rocker, hates Bush, says Republicans always cheat on election. Yeah, he's a self-hating Jewish atheist. You know what I thought was most interesting? I don't know if he still has this, but I remember seeing him a couple of years ago on the news or on one of the, I don't remember where, on one of these stations. And he is a sadomasochist. He's a sadomasochist. I mean, you know, a lot of these people are such sick people. He actually has a dungeon in his house for 20 years now. For 20 years, he's had a dungeon in his house where he invites people over and they engage in sadomasochistic sexual behavior. I mean, just they inflict pain on each other, and this is how they get pleasure out of life. I mean, sick. I mean, a sick person. Now, what can I tell you? I mean, these people are nuts. They're just completely nuts. Thank you, Obama Scum, out of USA Now, and now we go to our good old friend Kalman Ben Menachem, who writes, and I quote, Chaim, what can you tell us about the yeshiva of the Jewish idea that Rabbi Kahana started in Israel? Thank you, unquote. I can tell you that I'm very disappointed in that institution. Rabbi Kahana, when he ran it, of course, it was the greatest institution in the world when Rabbi Kahana was alive. But unfortunately, people took over, the same people that bad-mouthed and smeared me, that we exposed them in the last election, and really hurt them politically in the end. But those same types of people, they run the yeshiva. The first thing they did when they took over the yeshiva is they threw Harab Binyamin Kahana, Rabbi Kahana's son, out of the yeshiva. They threw him out because he was pure and ideological, and they wanted to, you know, they wanted to do things the practical way, the way that gets government money and the government doesn't bother you, and, you know, they wanted to be practical, which was not what Rabbi Kahana stood for. Rabbi Kahana stood for idealism and sacrifice and standing up for principles. Now, if we're going to be just doing whatever we have to do to get in good with the government and the establishment, then what's the point of having yeshiva? We have a million yeshivas that are like that. They all do that now. I mean, what's the point? What's the point of having a Kahanas yeshiva? Kahanas yeshiva is supposed to be idealists, people willing to sacrifice for the truth. And Harab Binyamin, Rabbi Kahana's son, wanted to do that, and they threw him out. They physically threw him out of the yeshiva, physically, and expelled him from the movement. He eventually was murdered with his wife by Arab terrorists. But I mean, they smeared him. Baruch Marzel wrote terrible things. We did a video exposing this. He wrote terrible things about the Harab Binyamin, smearing Harab Binyamin, same way they smeared me. Terrible. I mean, just terrible. Rabbi Kreuzer, who is the main rabbi in the yeshiva of the Jewish idea, said that Rabbi Kahana would also have condemned Tag Mechir. I did a Hebrew video on this also. Rabbi Kreuzer actually said, Rabbi Kahana, if Rabbi Kahana were here, he would have condemned Tag Mechir. That's a lie. A lie. Rabbi Kahana always defended and applauded Jewish freedom fighters and the Jewish underground. Always. Rabbi Kahana personally, repeatedly urged me to bomb Soviet diplomatic targets in order to free Soviet Jews. And Rabbi Kahana was convicted and went to prison for bombing the Soviet diplomatic headquarters that existed at that time in Glen Cove, Long Island. Rabbi Kahana was convicted on bombing charges and went to prison on bombing charges. So the claim that Rabbi Kahana, now that they're trying to remake Rabbi Kreuzer wanted to remake Rabbi Kahana into someone who condemned Tag Mechir, what are you kidding me? Rabbi Kahana was a convicted bomber. And he appointed me to run the JDL because he wanted bombs to free Soviet Jews. He would have condemned these brave kids in Tag Mechir who go out with spray and spray paint slogans on Arab property in order to finally give a Jewish response to something. Now, we're not allowed to applaud Tag Mechir legally. I can't applaud their activities legally. We're not allowed to. But you can't force me to condemn them. You cannot force us to condemn them. So we don't condemn them. And Rabbi Kahana certainly would not have condemned them. He used to applaud them because in those days it was legal to applaud them. Now things have changed. Now they actually crack down on people who applaud even something like this, where a bunch of Jewish kids go out and try to do things to defend the Jewish people. Rabbi Kreuzer said Rabbi Kahana would have condemned them. Oh, please. By the way, we did Hebrew videos on that where we showed Rabbi Kahana applauding organizations that did far more than Tag Mechir. Rabbi Kahana started Terror Neged Terror, which means terror against terror, an organization that went around bombing Arab targets in Israel. Rabbi Kahana started that organization. And he applauded it openly. So, you know, these people are telling us things that are not true. Now, we in JTF represent what Rabbi Kahana really represented. That's the truth. We represent what he really represented, and all the others hate our guts because we remind people that they've betrayed the principles. Thank you, Kalman Ben Menachem. And now we go to... And I'm sorry, by the way. I'm very sorry to have to give you that type of message. I know it's unpleasant. But I'm going to tell the truth. And now we go to the great paper cut, who writes, and I quote, Chaim, what is your opinion of Dr. Ben Carson? Should he run for president? Have you seen the movie Gifted Hands? Unquote. I mean, I like Dr. Ben Carson. He seems to be a pretty good guy. I like him, and you know, he seems to be basically a good guy. But no, I don't think he should run for president. Based on what? He's a doctor. He's a surgeon. Why? What makes him qualified to run for president? I haven't seen the movie Gifted Hands. I know that's his biography. Is it his biography or autobiography? I'm not sure. I think he wrote a biography maybe it was an autobiography, but I know it's about his life story. I have not seen that movie. Dr. Ben Carson made a speech in February of this year in which he criticized political correctness and criticized certain things. And since then, he's made some statements criticizing Obamacare. Okay, wonderful. I'm glad that he does that. He's a black man and he's criticizing Obama. Wonderful. People get so excited, though. They want him already to run for president. I mean, that's, you know, I don't think he's qualified to be president because of that. He reminds me of Herman Cain. You remember Herman Cain ran for president? 999. You know, he had his plan called 999. You remember him? He ran for president in 2012. I mean, come on, you know. Not that I have anything against him, but he's not qualified to be president. Also, just to show you, you know, that you gotta have nerves of steel. You gotta have an iron spine to run for president, to be a real leader. They attacked Dr. Carson for making a statement about gays and gay marriage and saying, well, what about pedophilia and what about the bestiality? You know, he made some statements about bestiality and pedophilia, so they said, oh, you're comparing gays to pedophiles and bestiality. You can't do this. He right away apologized. He made some statement on the Hannity show, and he didn't actually compare them. I would compare them, but he didn't. He didn't compare. Chaim Ben Pesach would compare it, because in the Torah, you know, it's the same type, it's the same punishment for all of them. Bestiality, pedophilia, and homosexuality are all abominations in the Torah. So I would compare them. But he didn't actually do that. He didn't do that. He just indirectly tied them in some way, indirectly hinted that there's some connection. That I don't remember exactly. He made some statement on the Hannity show. He right away apologized. He started apologizing all over the place. You know, that's certainly not a good sign. So I don't think he has what it takes to run for president. I don't think he's a bad person. I don't think he's a bad person. But president of the United States and a candidate for president who's going to win. I mean, we gotta aim high when we're talking about that, when we're talking about something like that. Thank you, Paper Cut. And now we go to the great Tag Mechir Tzedek, who writes, and I quote, okay, do you think that cuts to Haredim are good? And if yes, do you think some Haredim will leave Israel perhaps, and is this a good thing, unquote. Well, it depends what you're talking about cutting to the Haredim. If you're talking about cutting the fact that they have big families and children, no, that's not good. The Israeli taxpayers and Israeli government should subsidize big Jewish families. Only big Jewish families, not big Muslim families. Right now, most of the subsidies go to Muslims to have children in Israel. The subsidy should go only to Jewish families to have kids. It's a Jewish state. We should be subsidizing big Jewish families. And the Haredim have more children than any other sector in Israel, except maybe the Jewish settlers. The Jewish settlers in Judea and Samaria, they also have gigantic families. Baruch Hashem, thank God. But we should be subsidizing Jewish babies and big Jewish families. That should not be cut at all. What should be cut is subsidizing the Muslim families and the Arab families. That should be eliminated. And all the money should go just to subsidizing big Jewish families and having lots of Jewish babies. And now you ask if I think it would be a good thing if Haredim left Israel? God forbid, of course not. Of course not. Now, I have differences with the Haredim, but they're our fellow Jews. Of course not. I don't want them to leave Israel. Of course not. They're bringing up religious kids who believe in many of the mitzvot, at least. I think that the fact that they don't believe in Eretz Yisrael, I think that that's a terrible, terribly unfortunate thing. But their children will. Their children, I think, will eventually do tshuva on that issue and will eventually understand. Of course I don't want them to leave. The Haredim should not leave. The people who should leave are the leftists and the Peace Now people and the gays in northern Tel Aviv. Those people should leave. If we were in power, they'd all want to leave. I can't tell you how many times we've done Hebrew videos and they've said, if you were in power, we would leave Israel. You know, they're threatening me with this as if this is something that would be bad. You know, they don't realize they're encouraging me. I want them to leave. The leftist, self-hating, Peace Now garbage, they should leave Israel. But the Haredim, our Haredi brothers and sisters, even if we have differences with them, of course they shouldn't leave. No. No. And they should have big families and lots of Jewish kids. Thank you, Tag Mechir Tzedek. And now we go to the great Gimatria, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, please compare Aguda and Shas, unquote. Aguda and Shas are two so-called Haredi political parties who are corrupt, evil, sellout frauds. They're just sellout frauds. They support giving away the land of Israel. Shas supported the Oslo Accords. Aguda supported the Gush Katif expulsion. Both of them, because there were differences with Yair Lapid, and the new Israeli government. Both of them were threatening to support the left. They were willing to join forces with the extreme left now, just to punish Netanyahu for what he wants to do. They're willing to join with the extreme left and give away the whole land of Israel. I mean, ugh. Terrible political parties, horrible political parties, who deserve nothing but contempt from God-fearing Jews. They are a chilul Hashem. They are chilul Hashem beribua. How would I say that in English? They are desecrators of God's name squared. Beribua means squared. Not only do they desecrate God's name, they desecrate God's name squared. Just a disgrace. And now Gimatria writes, and I quote, what can you tell us about the satanic verses, unquote. The satanic verses are pagan verses that were part of the Quran, that Muhammad put into the Quran, which praise various Arab gods and Islamic gods, because Islam was polytheistic at one time, and Muhammad was polytheistic, and so it's pagan verses that were in the Quran and they were taken out later. And of course, when someone exposed the fact that these satanic verses were in there, you know, now there's a death sentence on that person. But the truth is, they were part of the Quran at one time, which shows what a fraud Muhammad is and what a fraud the Quran is and what a fraud Islam is. And now Gimatria writes, have you spoken to Craig Wynne lately, unquote. No, I have not spoken to Craig Wynne in, I don't know, when was the last time we did videos together? We did quite a few videos together. They're on YouTube. I think most of them are on YouTube. We did quite a few videos together. When did I speak to him last? When did I speak to him last? In 2005, 2006? I don't remember, but something like that, 2005, 2006. The last time he came to New York, he flew into New York and we recorded programs together. Thank you, Gimatria. And now we go to the great Nekama, who writes, and I quote, is Philip Chisholm, the animal who killed his math teacher, related to Shirley Chisholm? Spelling is different. Would love to hear your imitation, unquote. Oh, what a story. Have you followed this story? Have our great JTFers, have you followed this story of Philip Chisholm, a 14-year-old black kid who had a white teacher who wanted to help him with math because, you know, like many affirmative action students, you know, he can't do math. You know, the black, it reminds me of all the blacks who say, trillions and trillions of slaves. They have no conception of numbers. I'm sorry to say, but most black people have no conception of numbers. They cannot figure out anything when it comes to numbers or math. It's just unbelievable. It's unbelievable. You know, I remember doing debates with them on the radio, and Rabbi Kahana doing debates with a black spokesman would say, trillions and trillions of slaves were thrown off of those slave ships in the Atlantic Ocean. Mm-hmm. And these were spokesmen for black organizations, for the NAACP and the Urban League and black organizations, the so-called ministers. And they were saying trillions of slaves, trillions with a T, were thrown off the slave ships. Anyway, they have no, you know, it's like Barack Hussein Obama saying, yeah, I've already visited 57 states so far. Mm-hmm. You know, he's already visited 57 states. You know, without that teleprompter, he's lost without that teleprompter. You know, he really, without that teleprompter, he's in a lot of trouble, Barack Hussein Obama. Anyway, this beast, his math teacher, wanted to help him with math, so she said, come after school, because he didn't know how to do anything. He didn't know how to do any math. What a surprise. You know, math is a white subject. You know, that's what they always say on the IQ test. Reading is a white subject. Math is a white subject. Why don't you have black subjects like basketball? Mm-hmm. Anyway, so she wanted to help him, you know. So she asked him to come over after school to help him, you know, so she could tutor him in math. She was willing to take time and spend extra time that she wasn't getting paid for to help this 14-year-old piece of garbage. Anyway, he shows up with a knife and stabs her to death and drags her body out and stabs her to death and drags her body out. And, you know, he was caught on camera doing it because they had cameras in the school. He was also dumb, you know, dragging it out with camera. He didn't realize he's being, you know, filmed. But anyway, he murders this teacher who just wanted to help him. He murdered her in cold blood. And, of course, now we're being told, now we're being told, of course, that we should understand. Oh, and by the way, after he stabbed his teacher to death, his teacher wanted to help him. For no reason, he stabbed her to death. He murdered her brutally. You know what he did afterwards? He went to see a movie. Then he went out to see a movie. Stabbed her to death. Stabs this poor woman to death. Then he goes to see a movie. I mean, these are such cruel, vicious, evil people. What human excrement. Just human excrement. Anyway, let's hope nekama, that the day comes when we get nekama, when we get revenge against all the evil people of the world. Bezrat Hashem, that day should come speedily in our days. Amen ken yehi ratzon. Thank you, nekama. And now we go to the great EB22, who writes, and I quote, "Why do you believe that Barack Hussein Obama won the 2012 Hispanic vote by more than 2-1, despite BHO throwing George Zimmerman under the bus?" Unquote. Because the Hispanic voters who voted for Obama don't care about George Zimmerman. They don't care about that. The only thing they care about is amnesty for illegal aliens and getting more benefits from the federal government. That's why if we give amnesty to the illegals in this country, and if we keep our open border policies, this is what's going to be the end of America. We may already, by the way, it may be too late already. I hope not. We're supporting Ted Cruz and we're hoping it's not too late. But it may already be too late. I don't know. We're going to see in the next election, if in 2016, if we still have a shot. But, these insane, by the way, look at how insane the Republicans are, EB. All the major Republican candidates, except for Ted Cruz, support amnesty. Can you imagine? I mean, this is like cutting your throat and doing everything you can to cut your own throat. How are the Republicans going to win if we bring tens of millions of Hispanics into this country and legalize tens of millions of Hispanics and make them new voters for the Democrat Party? How in the world are you going to add that to the fact that Obama already won majorities in the past two elections? There'll be no chance of ever electing a decent president again. It's over if that happens. And yet, of course, Chris Christie, he naturally wants amnesty, of course. Paul Ryan, the congressman from Wisconsin who was the vice presidential candidate, that's sellout. He immediately endorsed amnesty. He wants amnesty. Walker, the governor of Wisconsin, another phony sellout, he supports amnesty. He announced, you know, they all think they look noble when they support these things. They look noble. It's horrible. I mean, just horrible. And Rand Paul supports amnesty, supports open borders, just like his father, Ron Paul. The only one who has consistently been against it is Ted Cruz. And by the way, Ted Cruz, of course, is half Hispanic. His father was Cuban. But he wants to preserve the United States of America. And I think he clearly understands what's at stake here. Thank you, EB. And now we go to a new member, Australian Christian. Welcome to our forum, Australian Christian. Australian Christian writes, and I quote, "One, is it possible to stop Muslim immigration to the West?" Unquote. And two, let me answer both of them at the same time. Two, would it ever be possible to legally deport Muslims from the West? Unquote. Both are certainly possible if a majority of people in the West wanted it. If a majority of people in the West voted in leaders that wanted to do this, of course it could be done. Of course it could be done. If you have leaders that want to do this, why can't it be done? Of course. If the majority of people are determined to do it, and we have people, leaders who are stubborn and strong and determined to do this, you bet it can be done. Of course it can be done. And of course, That's something that we fight for. We want that day to come when people wake up and understand what a danger we're facing here. Thank you, Australian Christian. And now we go to the great LKZ, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom and God bless you. Why is bestiality and witchcraft next to each other? How do you make tshuva for both? What is JTF's message for Baal tshuvas?" Unquote. Okay. Why they're next to each other, you mean in the Torah, bestiality and witchcraft? I don't know the answer to that. That I don't know. How do you do tshuva for both? Well, you know, there's the formula for tshuva in Judaism. Tshuva means returning. Why do we call people who repent and people who change their way, their bad ways and become good and turn to a Torah life, why do we call that tshuva? Why do we call it return? Why do we call it return? Because the original soul of a person is good and pure. It's when you come into your body in this world that you face these challenges, and it eventually corrupts the soul. If you make the wrong choices, your soul gets corrupted. But the original soul of every human being is actually pure and good. The original soul. People eventually then corrupt and ruin their souls if they do bad things. Tshuva means going back to the original pure soul that you came into the world with. How do you do that? It's a three-step process. Number one, you admit that you committed a sin. You admit it to God. You admit you committed a sin to God. Number two, you express genuine remorse and you feel genuine remorse. You express and feel real remorse, contrition, regret for what you did. You really feel regretful and remorseful for what you did. That's the second step. And the third step is you promise not to do it again, and you don't do it again. And you lead a new life. You become a new person. So you admit the sin, you feel real remorse for the sin, and you promise not to commit the sin again. Those are the three steps in tshuva. What is JTF's message for Baalei tshuva? Baalei tshuva is how we would say it in Hebrew, for plural. Our message, because Baal means is singular, Baalei is plural, connected to the word tshuva. I don't want to give a Hebrew grammar lesson now. I don't want people to be lost in what I'm saying here. But our message is very simple. Our message is that it's worthwhile for you to do what the creator of the universe wants you to do. Obviously, God has no reason to want anything but the best for us. God created us. He wants the best for us. There's nothing we can do for him. We can't help him. He's perfect. But he created us because he wants to share with us good. He wants us to experience good. And so the best thing we could do is exactly what he wants for us, what the Bible says we should be doing, what he wants for us. That's the best thing we can be doing for ourselves and for the world. So of course it's the best thing anybody could do is do tshuva, is return to what we're supposed to do and what we're supposed to believe in. Thank you, LKZ. And now we go to the great Maimonides, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, can you please tell us about Craig Wynne and if you agree with his interpretation of the Bible," unquote. I like Craig Wynne. I think he's a good guy. I think he's very courageous. He courageously stands up for what he believes in. I don't agree with his interpretation of the Bible in terms of he's a Christian. He wouldn't call himself a Christian because he doesn't like the term Christian, but you know, he believes in the Christian Bible, so I would call him a Christian. Even though he says that that's not the correct word, you know, he has his own words that he uses. I don't even know what the words are, but I don't remember, but he has his own words that he would use to express his beliefs. But he is, in effect, he's a Christian. And of course, I'm a Torah Jew, so we have a different interpretation of the Bible in that regard. Torah Judaism and Christianity do have a different view of the Bible. There are some differences. But when it comes to the danger of Islam, when it comes to the importance of supporting Israel and the Jewish people, we're in agreement, and he completely agrees with us on those issues. And he's very courageous in expressing his views. Thank you, Maimonides. And now we go to the great Confederate Kahanist, who writes, and I quote, "De Chaim, in order for a Republican to win the presidency in 2016, Will voter ID laws in more states need to be passed? Thanks and God bless, unquote. It certainly will help. Every time there's a voter ID law, that helps because there's tremendous Democrat voter fraud in many of the inner cities where you have virtually no Republicans and there's no supervision. There's massive voter fraud. You had situations where, you know, we had 26,000 votes for Obama and zero votes for Mitt Romney. How could it be 26,000 to zero? I mean, statistically. I mean, it was so obvious that there was voter fraud here and that first of all, Mitt Romney votes were being eliminated and destroyed. And Obama votes were being multiplied. It's so obvious. I'll give you another example of the type of massive voter fraud that takes place with the early voting. People mail in their ballots. What if you mail in your ballot and an affirmative action person is supposed to count your ballot? What if they don't? What if they just destroy it? Now, you don't think this took place? I know people who tried to register to vote in New York, and because they wanted to register Republican, the Board of Elections in New York said, we never got your form. No, we never received it. Mm-mm. Now, I know that as a fact. I mean, I know that took place. I know several instances where that took place, where they just destroyed it. If it's a Republican or from a white area or an Orthodox Jewish area, Orthodox Jews voted 90% for Romney. But, you know, Orthodox Jews usually vote 90% Republican for president. So if it's in an area like that, they just destroy them. They destroy the ballots. You know, they destroy the registration forms. And, you know, that happened to a number of people that I know. So there is voter fraud that takes place. That's why anything that where you're required to show ID or anything where you're required to do something to prove yourself is always good. For us, for the Republican side, it's always good because the fraud is on the other side. You have illegal aliens that are voting. In New York City, you have a lot of illegal aliens that vote. And in other big cities. Anyway, I hope that answers the question. Thank you, Confederate Kahana. So the answer is we want voter ID laws in as many states as possible. We just want clean, honest elections. That's all we're asking for is clean, honest elections. I happen to think that if the 2012 election had been clean and honest, I think Mitt Romney would have won. I really believe that. Thank you, Confederate Kahanist. And now we go to our old friend, old longtime friend, Christians for Jews. Welcome back. Christians for Jews writes, and I quote, "What do you think of Robert Spencer? Would you ever work with him?" Unquote. I would work with Robert Spencer. Sure, I would work with. I work with people. You know, I have differences with him. I think that he's not taking the stand that I would like to take on issues. I think his stand is much too appeasing of the Muslims and the Arabs, and I don't think he's taking a strong enough stand. I disagree with a lot of the things that he says. He says a lot of politically correct things that I disagree with that I think are harmful. But he says some things in some areas that I would agree with. You know, if he would not be willing to work with us. He's not willing to work with us. But if he were, yes, you know, to achieve common goals and to try to save the world from this terrible danger, of course I would work. I work with a lot of people that we don't agree with them on everything in order to achieve common goals, of course. Thank you, Christians for Jews. And now we go to the great Ephraim ben Noach, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, why in Genesis 44:5 does it say Joseph uses the cup for divination? Thank you and God bless, unquote. Okay, I think I know the answer to this already, but let me check that source anyway. Hold on, I got to get to it. Let me see. 44:5 would be Bereshit Perek Mendalet Pasuk He. Okay. Halo ze asher yishte Adoni bo Vehu nachesh yenachesh bo. Haloze. Okay, this is the beginning part that you're referring to of the pasuk of the verse. Halo ze asher yishte adoni bo. Is this not what my master drinks from? Vehu nachesh yenachesh bo. And this is what he guesses from. Okay, because the word the verb lenachesh doesn't just mean to divine, it means to guess. You know, if you want to say to someone in Hebrew, guess how old I am, or guess where I come from, or guess, you know, you say nachesh. So that's the Hebrew word for to guess. And let's see, I think I know the answer to this. Let me see. Tirgum unculus. Oh, here we go. Ibn Ezra. Yeah, it's what I thought. Okay, Ibn Ezra is one of the great rabbinic scholars. I'm looking for how they describe this. It means that what happened was Yosef wanted to see if his brothers would be honest, so he used it to test them. Nachesh yanachesh, in other words, to be able to evaluate, because you can use lenachesh also to guess or evaluate about how somebody's going to be in the future. So he used it to guess or evaluate what they would do in the future. That's what it means. So in other words, he used it to test his brothers, not to do divination, obviously not Joseph, obviously didn't believe in that. Divination is Avodah Zarah, it's idolatry, we're not allowed to do things like that. Yosef was a prophet. He was a prophet of God, and he used it. It's saying here that basically that he used it, his servants who stopped the brothers on the way back to the land of Israel, they're saying he used it to be able to determine, to be able to guess or determine, guess in quotes, or determine whether or not they were really honest. He used it to test them. That was the meaning of it. Okay, thank you, Ephraim. And now we go to our great friend, Secular Believer, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, have you seen any evidence that the tactics of Tag Mechir have been effective and are influencing events? Unquote. Okay, great question. First of all, it's not enough. Just like what JTF does is not enough. When JTF puts up videos, and when JTF speaks out and tries to convince people and reaches people with the message, is that enough? If we reach a few thousand people every month, is that enough? It's not enough. But is it useful? Is it good? Is it positive? It is useful and positive and good. Tag Mechir, when they go and spray paint graffiti on Arab property, or when they puncture the tires of hundreds of Arab cars, as they've done, or when they firebomb Arab cars, or when they firebomb mosques, when they attack Arab property or or retaliate against Arabs because Arabs murdered Jews or because of some other attack on the Jewish people. Is that effective? Well, let me put it to you this way. It's making the Arabs feel uncomfortable. I don't think the hundreds of Arabs who wake up in the morning and see their car tires punctured are happy about it. I think it hurts their quality of life. I think it does intimidate them. I think it creates an atmosphere where there's less of the mixing between Arabs and Jews that leads to Arab-Jewish intermarriage and leads to the Jewish illusion that we can have peace with the Arabs in the land of Israel. So I think in those respects, I think what Tag Mechir is doing is creating, number one, some fear among the Arabs, making their lives uncomfortable, and creating new barriers between Arabs and Jews to prevent intermarriage and assimilation and to prevent Jews from living under the illusion that we can be friends with the Arabs and everything will be wonderful and we'll just keep letting them grow and grow and we can trust them. So in those respects, Tag Mechir, what does Tag Mechir achieve? Tag Mechir achieves deterrence, creates fear among the enemy, retaliates, and shows that somebody, and again, I'm not applauding what they're doing. I'm not applauding what they're doing because we're not allowed to applaud it. I'm just describing events like a news reporter here of what I think the results are. But I'm not applauding it because we're not allowed to applaud it legally. I don't condemn them, but I'm not allowed to applaud them. But it shows, most of all, I think it shows that somebody is doing something. That not everybody is just passively going like sheep to the slaughter. Not everybody's just passively sitting back and watching the evil insanity that we have now in the land of Israel going on. These kids and it's widely believed that these are just teenage kids, mainly yeshiva students. These teenage yeshiva students are showing that somebody is going to do something. Somebody's going to finally stand up and do something. It may not be the thing that will save the world overnight. Okay. But it shows somebody cares. And somebody's fighting back. And somebody's not going to take this sitting down. So I'll leave it up to every one of our great JTFers to decide for themselves if they think that's a good thing or not. Anyway, that's how I see it. Thank you, secular believer. And now we go to the great Kahana loyalist who writes, and I quote, Chaim, why is it Jews seem unable to learn from our history, unquote. That is a great question, Kahana loyalist. Very, very important question, of course. You know, one of our sayings is Kahanis. One thing we learn from history is that Jews never learn. God forbid, because someday they're going to learn. In the final days of redemption, they're going to learn. But until then, they haven't been learning. What you're saying is true. You have to understand, Kahana loyalists, that after thousands of years of being hated by the whole world and persecuted everywhere they went and despised and ridiculed and murdered and raped and expelled and tortured, and this was the history of the Jewish people for thousands of years. It's like part of the Jewish character to react in a way where we deny reality. We desperately want to pretend that there are moderates, that we have allies, that we can turn to people. It's all baloney. But we want to live under this illusion. We don't want Am Levadad Yishkon Uvagoyim Lo Yitchashev, which is, Lo, this is a nation that shall dwell alone and among the nations not be reckoned. In other words, Israel was meant to dwell alone because that's Kiddush Hashem. When Israel is alone and wins great victories without foreign aid, when there's no foreign aid, and Israel by herself wins these victories, that's when people have to say, oh, this had to be God. This was just a miracle from God. But the Jews don't learn that lesson. They think it's impractical. You can't. You know, it's very sad that they don't learn that lesson. Because that's something we see over and over again in history. We see that what the Torah tells us is true. It really does work out that way. Jews don't learn because they don't believe, they don't have the faith, they don't have the knowledge, and they don't want to see it that way. They don't want a world in which they have to struggle against evil and have to stand against all the odds. They don't want a world like that. And so that's the problem we're faced with. But Kahana loyalists, someday it's going to change. Maybe not in our lifetime, but someday that's going to change. Someday. And we, of course, have to do everything we can as Kahanists to bring that day as close as possible, to bring that day as quickly as possible. Thank you, Kahana loyalist. And I want to thank everybody for another show that I very much enjoyed doing. Until next week, shalom.